This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Now it's time for our weekly check-in on the top news out of the nation's capital. President George H.W. Bush's funeral was held today with all living presidents in attendance. The debate over a possible government shutdown could be delayed because of the ceremonies, and Republican senators are calling for action against Saudi Arabia after a CIA briefing on the killing of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Ginger Gibson is a political correspondent for Reuters. Ginger, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, some of the biggest names, Ginger, in American politics in Washington today for this observance of the late president, George H.W. Bush. What kind of things are people focusing on? What aspects of his legacy are you hearing a lot of talk about in the Capitol today?
That's right. We saw the nation's living presidents join dignitaries from around the world, as well as the United States Senate and House. In honoring George H.W. Bush's legacy, one eulogy said that he was the brightest light in his Thousand Points of Light initiative, which was how he tried to expand and grow volunteerism in America. They talked about his ability to give, the way he cared for his family, and that he gave tremendously to the U.S. in his time in a long career in public service, not just as president, but as vice president, as head of the CIA, as a member of the United States House, and as an ambassador to the United Nations.
Now, his role as president, like any president, people will debate the upsides and downsides of the presidency, and that'll go on into the future. When something like this happens, though, a former president passes away, do people on both sides of the aisle kind of set aside those debates, at least for that week?
I think so. I think that the U.S. has come to understand that our presidents are imperfect, that we have partisan disagreements about what should be done and how presidents should prioritize policy. But at the end of the day, they're viewed as having been public servants. I spoke with Nancy Pelosi on Monday as she left the first ceremony in the rotunda, and she was fighting back tears and told me that she loved George H.W. Bush, that it was an honor to have worked with him. I'm sure Nancy Pelosi disagrees with him on quite a few policy positions and quite a few of the decisions he made while he was in office. But people can put that aside. And I think people often forget or don't realize that in Washington, people interact on a human level. The journalists, the lawmakers, the presidents get to know each other. And it's not always about who thinks the other one is right or wrong, but really people in learning each other as humans.
Talking to Ginger Gibson from Reuters, looking at some of the top news in national politics. Well, Ginger, even with these observances, the politics of today do go on. They continue. We have this, once again, risk of a government shutdown. Congress with yet another spending bill deadline. The president wants a lot of border wall funding. Democrats in particular are saying he's not going to get that much. What is the current status of that debate over government funding and how that might be delayed because of what's going on this week?
That's right. We had originally expected Congress to try to hammer out a deal on government funding this week, by the end of this week. Instead, the House of Representatives canceled all of their votes. Some members didn't even come to Washington, those who were attending the funeral. And instead, we expect in the next 24 to 48 hours, Congress, with little fanfare, will pass a two-week extension of government funding, which gets us to December 21st. They're going to be pushing right up against Christmas. And there are, as you said, parts of it that have not been resolved. Republicans want to see funding for the president's wall. Democrats know that they take control of the House in January, and they are going to gain a good deal more leverage in this process. They don't want to give too much. They also don't want too much responsibility once they're in charge. So it's a delicate balance. And there is a risk that on the 21st, they could fail to come to an agreement and the government could shut down. A bit of a Grinch showing up for the Christmas holiday.
As I understand it, this might not be a complete and utter government shutdown. Some pieces of funding bills have been passed that would keep a lot of operations going on. But a partial government shutdown, as you say, over the Christmas holiday, not something that a lot of politicians necessarily want to take credit for.
That's right. They have passed some of the spending bills, things like the Pentagon, some other government operations would continue. But if you only paid one of your utility bills and they shut your gas off but left your power on, it would still be very disruptive to your home. And that's a bit of what we could be looking at in a much larger scale. A partial government shutdown would still be very disruptive for the United States.
And what signals has President Trump been sending about whether he would stand by this? I think he's looking for $5 billion in this spending bill for that border wall.
That's right. He wants $5 billion. There's been some talk that Democrats could get him $1 billion, although there has been suggestions that they're going to stick to zero for the president. He has said that he would be willing to shut the government down over his wall, that he thinks he can win the public relations battle, that he would blame Democrats for not going with him. We saw him tweeting some of the same, saying that he needed Democratic votes to stop illegal immigration. But that's a difficult public relations battle to win, especially while Republicans still control both chambers of Congress and the White House.
We're talking to Ginger Gibson, correspondent at Reuters, about some of the top national political news of the week. We'll pick up the conversation with a look at a rift between some key Republican senators and the White House over Saudi Arabia. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up our conversation about the top news in national politics with Ginger Gibson from Reuters. News this week, CIA Director Gina Haspel briefed senators involved in foreign affairs committees on the investigation into the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi in Turkey at the Saudi Arabian embassy there. They concluded, the senators, that it was coordinated by the Crown Prince, a key player in Saudi Arabia. Here's a listen to Republican Senator Lindsey Graham and what he had to say after leaving that briefing.
I went into the briefing believing it was virtually impossible for an operation like this to be carried out without the Crown Prince's knowledge. I left the briefing with high confidence that my initial assessment of the situation is correct. I think Secretary Pompeo and Mattis are following the lead of the president. There's not a smoking gun, there's a smoking saw.
So very different read on this from a key Republican senator there, Ginger, versus what we've heard from the White House and key cabinet members who still say there's doubt as to whether the Saudi Crown Prince had something to do with this.
That's right. And it's important to remember that Lindsey Graham has become quite a staunch defender of the president, one of his strongest allies in the United States Senate, offering what was an unequivocal rebuke of the position the president has held, most recently saying that maybe the Crown Prince was aware, maybe he wasn't. Who really knows? Sort of like taking maybe he did, maybe he didn't position to not try to lay blame. But every senator that left that briefing seemed to be pretty adamant that there was no doubt that the Crown Prince was aware that he was not only had ordered it, but was monitoring it in real time as it happened.
And we've heard from other Republican senators, including, I think, from Bob Corker, okay, we know this happened. Now, what do we as Congress do about it? What kind of things are on the table?
There are a limited number of things. We have to remember that the Constitution, when it comes to foreign policy, gives the president quite a good deal of latitude. But Congress does have some abilities to apply pressures. They can affect the appropriations that we just talked about. They can put what are known as riders into the appropriations bills that say that the administration must do or do certain things. And they can also pass legislation if they can get an overwhelming majority that would impose sanctions. It's yet to be seen whether the president would approve such sanctions. But if there, especially this much Republican sentiment on it, one would expect to see a veto-proof majority that would be able to sort of overcome any opposition from the president.
Then we have a sentencing memo changing topics. A special counsel Robert Mueller's office told a federal court, hey, Michael Flynn, former national security advisor, a retired general, should get little or no jail time for lying to Congress, Mueller's team says, because he's been really helpful to us. And then they gave this document outlining how helpful and in what ways. And we in the public see a few lines and then lots of black lines redacting precisely how Flynn has been helpful. What can we glean from this heavily redacted document, Ginger?
That's right. It is heavily redacted. There is lots of black lines, but we know that Flynn helped in several investigations, maybe not just the ones that we have paid the closest attention to, that he may have encouraged others from the campaign or close to the president to also cooperate with investigators in a way that provided them crucial information, that he has been forthcoming, and that he possibly felt that he needed to lie because he was trying to protect the president or because he was trying to be consistent with their public messaging. And for that reason, the prosecutor said they felt that he shouldn't go to jail and that he should face very minimal punishment because of that cooperation.
And the lines we can see say something about him providing information about potential contacts between the Trump campaign and Russian officials, and also in some form of heavily redacted criminal investigation, too. I mean, I guess people are only speculating about exactly what those are, but it seems potentially like a big deal, the information he's given Mueller.
Well, we also, you're right, we have no idea what it is. Mm-hmm. It could be a criminal investigation completely unrelated to the president. So we don't know. But we tend to know that when informants, historically speaking, people who are cooperating with the government are forthcoming and the government says that they shouldn't face prison time, that tends to be because there are bigger fish to fry, and there are bigger crimes that they intend to pursue. We don't know what those are yet. We don't know when we will know what those are yet. But there does clearly be clear signs that the Mueller prosecution could result in criminal charges for someone else.
In our last few moments, Ginger, briefly, it was reported this week that the Republican National Congressional Committee was hacked during the 2018 elections. Not a lot of information about who hacked them or what was hacked. What do we know?
We know that the RNC had a small number of likely email accounts or other digital accounts hacked. I was told by the NRCC that this was a very sophisticated hack, that it indicated that it was conducted by someone who was sophisticated in cyber attacks. We don't know what was taken or what was seen or what information they were gleaning, but we do know that there was a compromise of some of their systems.
We'll be watching for more news about that. Ginger, as always, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Ginger Gibson is a political correspondent at Reuters. She was with us for a weekly check-in on the top stories in national politics.